in our church, and he kind of took me under his wing after I was saved. And there's Mr. Taylor talking about Mr. H.B. Barker. All these books are in circulation now, if you ever get your hands on one, please. Well, he came to Brantford, and he got up on the Sunday night, and he said, "Now, I'm getting kind of old." He said, "I would like to have a young man travel with me. I'd like him to preach the gospel for about 20 minutes at the beginning of the service, after opening it with prayer and singing. And then I'll take the remainder of it, and I'd like a young man to travel with me." And he gave the description of the young man he'd like to have. After the meeting, an old brother by the name of Mr. Lundy went up to him. He said, "Mr. Barker, the young man you want is over in Stratford. He's been over here 2 or 3 weekends preaching, and he's a young man that you described tonight." Well, Mr. Barker said, "How can I get in touch with him?" "Well, he has a friend here, and I think they'll phone over." Well, after I got home from the meeting Sunday night in Stratford, and after the father got home from the church in Brantford, 45 miles away, they phoned, and I just got in from church, and the phone rang, and I received this long-distance phone call. And it was the effect that Mr. H.B. Barker wanted to see me in Brantford. Well, I've heard of Mr. Barker. I thought, what does he want with me? So I said, "All right, I'll be there," and the meeting place is Dr. Deere's home. Dr. Deere has a son now on the mission team. The Deere is dead. So, I immediately phoned up Mr. Taylor after I got his phone call from Brantford. I said, "Mr. Taylor, have you written Mr. H.B. Barker at any time about me?" He said, "No, why?" I said, "I just got a phone call from Brantford. He's over there having a meeting, but I just got a phone call to get that. He wants me to go over and see him on Saturday at Dr. Deere's home." Well, he said, "By all means, go." So I did. I went over to Brantford and I said, "H.B. Barker," and he said, "I've been exercised since I've come to Canada on this trip about having a young man to go back with me when I return to the island down in South America." And he said, "I gave the description of the young man last Sunday, a week ago, and your name was given to me after the meeting, the young man that was just the description that I gave you, but I'm very glad to hear about you." Well, I said, "Mr. Barker, I'll tell you what my exercises are. The Lord's been leading me to go down to the southern states, especially to North Carolina." He said, "That's right." Now, he said, "I'm not ready to return to the island for about 4 months. And he said, "I believe that's just the way the Lord's leading you. If you go on down south and get about 4 months experience, and then you'll correspond and you'll meet toward the fall and you go down to the island." He said, "I'm very happy to see the way the Lord's leading." So I left Mr. Walker and went back to Scott. And naturally, on Monday morning, Mr. Taylor was a foreman in the railroad shop where I was. And he wanted to know why Mr. Barker wanted me. He said, "What did Mr. Barker want you for, Lester?" I said, "He wanted me to go preaching with him." He said, "I don't know a man in the world I've seen you go." He said, "It would be a wonderful privilege to be with Mr. Barker. He's one of the giants in the world." What did you tell him? Well, he had. Because now if I were to tell him what I told Mr. Barker, the whole thing would be out. And the Lord had been putting the pressure on me for about a month to tell the elders of the church in Stratford the way the Lord had been leading me down south. So he says, "What did you tell Mr. Barker?" I told him what I told Mr. Barker to call out. So he saw me hesitating. He said, "What did you tell him?" I said, "I won't tell you." "Well," he said, "Lester, you know, I've been interested in you ever since you've been saved, but I would like to know what you say." "I said, I'll come up to your house tomorrow night and help you Tuesday night." He said, "All right, I'll be there." Tuesday night I went up and I unburdened my heart. I told Mr. Taylor the way the Lord has been definitely with me. He said, "Lester, this assembly is prepared to put its hands on you and commend you to the Lord's work. We're very happy to hear
do that. Now I said, Mr. Taylor, don't you tell anybody what I told you tonight. You're the only one in this church that knows a thing about it. Now don't tell anybody. All right. Well, I wondered about it, and I thought, well, I wonder if I did the right thing. And of course, the devil really got after me. I'll tell you that. He was telling me I was making a big mistake, that I was listening to the mind of the Lord. It was all my imagination. So I thought to myself, I'm going to tell Mr. Taylor, not to tell anybody, that I'm not going out there. I heard about the work up in Manitoulin Island, up in Ontario, and I thought, I'm going up to Manitoulin Island, because you won't have to bother about crossing the border and getting a visa and all the border difficulties. I'm going up to the Manitoulin Island, I'm not going down south at all. If I get up to Mr. Taylor, I'm going to tell him. Well, that morning, I saw Mr. Taylor up in the balcony in the tea shop where he was forming, and I was down the border department, and I tried my best to get up there to tell him to forget everything I told him at his home on Tuesday night. But I wasn't going down south. But I couldn't get up. I was kept so busy, and that was an unusual thing. I used to have a little time to get up to see Mr. Taylor once in a while, but that day I was kept busy all day, and I couldn't get up. Well, as a rule, we met at the big gate each evening, and we walked along home together. It was several blocks before he went his way and I went out. I thought, I'm going to tell him tonight. And as a rule, I was always the first one to speak. Mr. Taylor was a very godly man, a man so sweet. But I was always the first one to start talking when he never did. But you know this, right? I got an intense feeling of him, and he beat me to it. Well, brother, he says, I went around to the brethren today and told you all your exercise. Well, I thought from this, what did they say? They're all in sight. Well, he broke his trust. But nevertheless, it was all out. I thought, well, the Lord maybe wanted it out. Anyway, the next weekend, I went down to St. Catherine's, a place not far from Niagara Falls, and I was still turning over in my mind the 4 months that Mr. Barker had mentioned. Mr. Barker said 4 months. Well, that's fine. I got 4 months. Maybe something will happen. I won't have to go after all. If I was backing up, trying to get out of it, maybe something will happen and I won't go down after all. So they asked me to preach in St. Catherine that night, and I did. After meeting, a lot of people standing out in front of the little chapel in St. Catherine. And among them was a lady, the mother of Clarence Lowe. I don't know whether any of you have met Clarence Lowe. He's one of our young teachers in North Carolina. Graduated from there, and I think he's likely met in that history from the Vendor and the Blueridge. He married the registrar at Blueridge 100 years ago. Well, it was his mother. She walked over to me after meeting that night, and Mr. Wilson, I enjoyed your message tonight. You're exercised about doing our teaching, are you? Giving all your time to the Lord's work? I said, yes. Yeah. He said, stay not 4 months and then come upon it. Lift up your eyes and look on the field. We are fresh already. And he walked away. Here I was, kind of comforting myself, I had 4 months. And he quoted that scripture, say not 4 months, then from the heart, look up your eyes, look on the feet. Well, I went back to Stratford, I think it was Sunday night after meeting that day, huh? And of course I was still working, doing the railway stop. A remarkable thing happened. As yet, my parents didn't know about it, the oversight, the brethren knew about it, but my father wasn't on the oversight, so he hadn't been told. So as yet, my mother and father did not know of my exercise, and I hadn't said a thing to them. So this is what happened the next week. I was to preach in my home church that Sunday night. As I got up to open the meeting, I looked at the back and I saw Mr. Fred Newton. From the meeting, and then I had to go from here to Canada about 4 years ago to take a few. He's a great Newton, and one of the most godly men I've ever met in my life. And here sat Mr. Newton, back in the audience. last I heard of him, he was away down Ashley because he had been teaching in Ashley, North Carolina, for 2 years. His wife, Gladys Marsh, came from a little village called Enville, about 27 miles from my home. After I was saved, he afforded young fellows and myself used to go to preach in the schoolhouse in Enville on Sunday nights. In fact, that little schoolhouse like this time, and we preached the gospel. Well, Gladys was there, and then she hired his neighbor down there as well. So this is how the Lord worked. They had gone down to Florida for a couple of weeks, and while they were down there, they were starting back to Asheville, North Carolina, where intention to go back to Asheville after the few weeks in Florida. They came to the crossroads where number one highway was straight on up to Niagara Falls. And we're in that direction to Niagara Falls, up to New York and Philadelphia. They were going to cross over to Canada there. Just before they got to the cross in the road, the one road 27, came them over this way, going up to Asheville, and number one going straight on up. They made up their minds hurriedly to go to Canada. Gladys says, "You know, Fred, my father is not ready. Both of us and you, my friends, are not to be left to go." He said, "All right." And here we came there the last minute, and Fred went into the meeting that night. Well, if only man knew about North Carolina, that's what he was to. Little did I know that he'd been praying for me for 2 years about North Carolina. So when I saw him at the back, I went back, I said, "The meeting, sir, would you like to preach tonight?" And he said, "You take my place." He said, "All right, so we're going ahead and preach." And the boy said to me after the meeting, "I'll invite Fred home and have a talk with him. He'll give you some information about how to get across to the state, to get your visa and so on. And he'll tell you how to fight. There's a good possibility." Once again, I said, "No, not yet. I'm not." And then I go. I was home about 5 minutes, and I was in the kitchen, I went back to the front door. And I even looked at the front door, and he should be walking into the front walk, and he did. My sister May, having had these guys, never knew his wife Gladys now very well. So, my sister, having died dead, and his wife, will be happy. So I was quite surprised, he didn't walk in, and they were all men in the front room. Fred looked at me, and I looked at him. He said, "Well, I don't mind the stand you exercise about doing your own self to keep your heart." That, in my turn, looked at me, and he said, "Yes." And I said, "Yes." And I turned it off, I said, "How do you get across the border? How do you end your state? How do you keep your heart?" So he began telling me some of the ways to take and how he got here from the 2 years before when he went down to Ashley and all. Anyway, he went home that night, and that was the information I got. Well, another thing happened too, right after that. I think it was the next Sunday night, the brethren asked me to the place about 45 miles from my home, where Mr. Andrew Miller was holding me. The brother said, "We'd like you to take some money." So he gave me some money to take over to Mr. Miller, who was holding these meetings in the schoolhouse about 45 miles from his desk. When I sold my car, so I asked the young fellow, Pete Bossy, who had been part of Boston, and the Lord had stated, using the example of Stratford, I said, "Pete, will you take me over this place, as it is to me now, so I can take this money to Mr. Miller?" He said, "Yes, I'll be around." So before we went, before he arrived at the door, I got on my knees. I said, "Lord, it's time to go. Down south, who am I to go with? And who am I to go with?" And just as I was turning my knees, I didn't keep following. When I went over there, Mr. Miller said, "Brother Lester, we'd like you to give your testimony for that. Will you take this part of me?" I said, "Well, I didn't come prepared for it, Mr. Miller. I came to hear you." Well, he said, "I'll give out a couple of things for you, and let's talk." And he said, I was taking my box, and I thought it was going to be but I heard someone singing back in the audience. Now, you are the time that a bumper car is the church. Anyone did say, why there was someone who'd be there asking to go into church. And there was someone sitting back there, and then a beautiful woman. I thought, who did that be? That's the very last thing to know. And then I got up with the police. Now he was going all the way to Chicago, the Chicago conference, and he turned back. He had driven over 450 miles that Monday. And when he went to Enville, he told the drivers, he was going to go over to Enville. And he drove over quite a few more miles to Enville to the little city house. Where Mr. Miller was having these meetings, and that line was sitting in the audience. So he waited until after the meeting, and he walked up and he said, well, what's the, who are you going, Frank, and who are you going with? And he said, Mr. Major, I asked the Lord to keep that people go out and make this man. And he said, the reason I'm asking you, and the reason is that, I came over here, I don't know, I came over here, I didn't know that you were going to be over here. And so I started looking at the time. And finally, talking to the office in the pond, where the pond. He and I had agreed to try to find you down in Ashley, North Carolina. In fact, that was one of the reasons I was going back to North Carolina. And we found you here. Here we go. We found you here. As I was talking to Willie at the conference, and how cool am I to be thinking about your background for about 3 more weeks? Helping you with your work and trying to find you with people. And I didn't want to commit you, I didn't know what your plans were, but he said that he'd have to get another lady. I didn't want to put up his tent if I was going to. And I said, Mr. Mason, that's all I do, I have to use you to go ahead and make your baby. He said, hi there. So, Wednesday night, I received a phone call from his wife and then Lord, he said, Chester, your home needs everything on the street. He said, he prepared for me for last day, Friday, and he said, yeah. He said, all right, Fred is wiring, and I'm today after the meeting. So, I went to a proper man, Peter. He was looking drunk, and he knows the best place after and passed on to the Lord. He was only receiving me when he took his effort. And so the word got around that I was going to leave, and Thursday night was set as the night for farewell. So whenever you're going, let us know, we want to give you a farewell. So it was a raining Thursday night. There was quite a crowd, and I was sitting up here at the front, and Alan Morrison, the one I mentioned in last week, a few sessions in the car. Alan came up and he sat right down beside me, walking down the aisle with him, just behind him, and he was sitting in the seat. And Alan leaned over and said, Lester, when you leave? I said, I'm leaving tomorrow morning, man. And I saw Fred Newton trying to pull up his shoulders and bite his lip. I didn't know it. But after the meeting, he took the thing behind me, Lester, he said, they're going to hit. He said, I got an organ back, and this is how I see that, Jim Smith is going to join in a meeting somewhere, and he's really not open for you to come. Well, if the devil didn't go to work on me, I had to tell the folks that there was going to be a delay, and I wasn't going to be able to let the demon share with anyone. So, anyway, when I got home that night, I didn't know what. A little while the phone rang, and Mr. Newton had gone back to India by this time. He phoned over. He said, Lester, did you go out and go up to the Spainer Bible Conference? I said, everybody I meet, they say, when are you going, Mr. Newton? When are you going? I've been trying to call him so many times. Anywhere to get out of sight, I'll do it. Well, he said, let's go, more than one. The choir and the priest. Well, the way I had planned to come down south was to come down on what they called a Jesus permit. Depended on the mood of the consul, whether you got 3 months or whether you got 6 months. If you got a 6 month permit to the States, you had to go back, have it renewed, and come down for 6 more months, or for 3 months, go back every 3 months and get renewed.
on the way up to the conference, I said, Taylor, how did you get your seat?
We spoke a little about it one night before, but we didn't know the details.
Well,
we didn't know the details.
And I said, why can't I get one then?
Well, he just said, well, no. The next day to London on the way back, I got one more to do. I come through with him then.
On ferry about 38 miles from the road. On the way back,
we both went to London straight over from the conference before we went to our home. He said, well, Lester, would you like to go down with me in about 3 weeks? This is the way it was.
I said, yes, I'll be down to the river, Dad. Well, we went to the consul and Lyndon said, is there any possibility of getting a visa into the state? What for?
Well, I said, as a minister.
He said, who you represent? Well, I said,
I live by faith. The Lord is sent us. I look to the Lord.
He said, what?
I said, I'm just trusting the Lord. I don't have anybody sponsoring on earth, just the Lord. How are we going to come on him if you become a public charge in the United States? No, he said, there's no possibility.
He said, we've given up the quota. We don't have any quota now because he said there are millions of people in the state, and this is in 1931, because there are millions of people in the state unemployed, on relief. And he said we canceled all quotas from all foreign countries because there's no possibility of getting in. Well, what would he have to do? Suppose he would even consider what would be the best thing.
Well, he said, I never heard of this thing before. You can talk to us. Most ministers are sponsors. They have a big organization behind
them. He said, all I could say is that you had a group of men or churches that would give us some letters to the effect that if you ever became a public charge down there, we could come on. Wherever you became a public charge.
Well, if you get those letters, will you consider the case?
Well, I'll consider. So we went back and Fred Nugent sat down, we wrote off several men, and there was my home church, but none of them would guarantee us a penny. They were commending you by faith. Look for the Lord. God called you to preach, you take care. And I got several of these men. My home assembly, another assembly, and several individuals who said also we want the bank account or the bank report of every man who gives you a letter. In other words, you've got to have money in the bank. You've got to have a letter to that effect. So we got these letters together and we hurried over to London. This is our second to go over. Then we see the consul and he said, will you get all your letters? Well, we got all but one. We were waiting for one, Mr. Warner, from down in Miami, Florida, and Mr. Newton knew very well. Very influential man of contact. No, we've got all but one. Well, I don't want to see any unless you got them all. Just as blunt as that. So we went home, and Monday morning, the letter came. So here we go again. We went back over to London, and we went in, settling on the table. We went through them one by one, not worth a thing. He said, all these letters are from Canadians. Now, how in the world could you come on Canadians if you became a public charge? If it comes like this from the States, he said, they might consider. You talk about the Lord trying faith. So we went home, prayed about it, and yet all the time I had peace in my heart that God was looking at me. Fred sat down and he worked with his typewriter and he pardoned me. He hadn't received any from the state, but Mr. Warner that I referred to was a later letter. But up to this time, all the rest we had were from Canada. But anyway, Fred sat down, he wrote these various ones, and Mr. Warner was one that he wrote. And these letters came back from the States. There were three or four men in Detroit. Roger Cannon was one, I can remember. Mr. Diller was another, and Mr. Warner was another, and Mr. J.C. Chapel of Raleigh, the some of you know, was another, and Mr. Allen, who loaned us $12,500 on this chapel in the 3 years ago with another. And these letters came back, and then it was that he went over, and Mr. Warner's letter was missing. He wanted it, and that's when the consul again turned it down until we had all the letters that we had. Finally, Mr. Warner's letter came and we went over.
Well, by this time, we were just getting exasperated, as we say, and yet somehow the Lord was giving us peace. And this is the fifth trip to the consul in London. We were in, we said to the secretary, can you see the consul? And he said, he's just gone away on a monthly vacation. He won't be back for a month.
Well, can we see the vice consul?
Yes, the vice consul.
Could we see him?
He went into his office, and evidently they had talked with him. Because the vice consul knew all about the case. And he said that he got that other letter. So he looked at it, and he called in his secretary, and he said, give this man this answer. And I got my reason. Now you see how the Lord worked that thing out. If I had come down 3 weeks before, when Mr. Newton had wired Mr. Foster, I'd have come down on a 3 month or a 6 month basis, whether the consul was in the news again. But through that 3 week delay, I came down with a visa so I could stay the rest of my life in the United States. And it was a very difficult time to get a visa then because of the depression and so many other works. You could hardly buy them, it was just a miracle that I got. But I was also told when they gave me my visa that it wasn't all over yet. He said, now this has got to be okay at the court where you're going through the court. That man's intended. Well, that was means from all sorts. Well, I believe the Lord expected us to use our common sense. So I went through the big part on the pool. I thought I'm going to travel first class. But I found out that the conference didn't take up as much time before he's traveling in pool and first class as he did with the others. So I didn't need a pool, but I got it anyway. So there weren't too many of us in the Pullman, when we reached Windsor, the post office on the ferry to Detroit. The consul came along and he sat down beside me. I didn't know at the time that he was a Catholic. So he looked at the papers. He said, where are you going? I said, south, North Carolina. He said, what have you been doing? In Penn. Well, I said, I was working the railroad shop, but I said, I'm going to the ministry. I said, you know, I used to play ice hockey for the Stratford Indians, but it's hard to turn out to be a minister. Well, it takes about a half an hour for that ferry to get across the Detroit River, possibly a little longer the time they hook up to the train and pull off. So I start telling him my conversion, how God has saved me. And how, instead of playing hockey as a career now, I was going out to preach the gospel. And you know, by this time, most of the time was taken up. And he looked out, and he was getting nearly caught. And he was so taken up with what I was telling him about my conversion. And he said, where's it going? I said, down the door. And he said, the Lord knows they need something down there. And he signed the visa, and he handed it. And there I was, I had my visa, and I stepped on American soil, and I'm still here. So there are some of the ways in which the Lord led in my coming south. So you see there's a lot to it. How the Lord put the pressure on me to get it out of me, what my exercises were, and then the obstacles that appeared, and yet every one of them were removed. I being in the way the Lord led me. The Lord tested me, but he removed his obstacles. No one else could do it. And as you look back upon these things and see the way the Lord led, it only strengthens your faith. Now I've given you three messages on my experience in Canada till I reached the border. Next Wednesday night we'll be in North Carolina. Romans 8:26. Likewise, the Spirit it also helpeth our infirmities, for we know not what we should pray for as we ought, but the Spirit itself maketh intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered. I want to remove those words, with groanings which cannot be uttered. Last week we were speaking about how the Lord led us to get our visa, and from the experiences that led up to our
meanings of the customs, and also some other definite meanings of the Lord as we are coming down south. And I think we finished at the border, but in reflecting upon some of the experiences we had prior to crossing over, I thought of one or two that would be almost, I think, wrong to omit them, because so much depended upon them, and that is the definite leading of the Spirit of God in one or two cases especially. We have been pointing out how the Lord was putting the pressure on us to go out into the ministry, and I was backing up, more or less trying to get out of it, but the pressure was too great. The Lord finally hedged me in until there was only one step to take, and that was that. But I remember one night, I would say a month or two before things really began to develop, I was working nights in the railroad shop in Stratford, and my mechanic was Jack O'Hara, and he was an atheist. Strange as it may seem, although he was an atheist, he did allow his boys to come to our Sunday school and be in my class. And yet he was an atheist. Strange thing, but nevertheless, he seemed to respect our views on the Bible, and he allowed his boys to come. Well, Jack and I were working one night to get off between 1 and 2. That was our time to get off for our dinner during the night. Whenever Jack got through eating his lunch, he would lay down and have his sleep. Sometimes he would sleep beyond the allotted time. Well, I used to take strong coffee with me, a thermos bottle full, because I'd get so drowsy and yet I wanted to study. Coffee used to keep me awake. Whenever I got through my lunch, I wanted to spend the rest of the lunch hour in study. This night I took with me Torrey's book on prayer, and it's a very challenging book. That night I was deeply troubled about and concerned about the path that seemed to be opening up before me. I remember as I read that book toward the end of the time allotted for our lunch, groanings began emanating from within. This was a new experience to me. I couldn't understand it. In a few minutes I called to Jack that the time was up for us to go back to our work, and at that time we were going to start taking out the grates out of the boiler of a big locomotive. And first of all, the mechanic, he went in and he took out the cotter pins and so on and loosened all these grates. Then he would put them up through the fire hole and I would take them from there and throw them down to the pit and afterwards put them on the truck. But as we left the dining room, this groaning kept continuing. Now, the only way I can describe it, and I very seldom mention it publicly, it's like hiccups. It's something I had no control over. I couldn't stop. And it occurred about every 15 seconds. And I was so embarrassed, seemingly, because knowing Jack was an atheist, that if he'd asked me what was wrong, I wouldn't have been able to have told him. And so I kept about 10 or 15 feet away from him. As we walked from the dining hall to the big erecting shop where the locomotive was, where we worked the rest of the evening. But I kept back and kind of loitered behind as he went on, and finally he got up into the fire hole and down into the boiler. And I climbed up and I sat in the cab where the engineer generally sits, and Jack, he had about an hour's work to do in there, loosening all the cotter pins and getting the crate ready before he could put them up to me and I could put them up. Now that kept up for just about 2 hours. And you could hear, I'd say, a good 15 feet away, groaning. Just like a person who is in deep pain or agony. I had no control over it. And the only scripture I could find was this scripture that I read to you in Romans 8:26. Likewise the Spirit also helpeth our infirmities, wherefore we know not what we should pray for as we ought, but the Spirit itself or himself maketh intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered. During that time, I had a burden for souls. That's all I thought about was precious souls. And it was a groaning of the Spirit of God in my heart. Well, I've never had that experience since. But I had it that night for about 2 hours, and it was then when I was right in the midst of God dealing with me about going into full-time service. I'll never forget that experience. A few days after, I was back on day work, 2 weekdays and 2 weeks nights. And I remember going down the railway shop, because it was a long repair shop, I was basically about 4 blocks long. And the big aisle that we used to walk up and down in, the various men going from different departments, the water department, machine department, electric department, plumbing department, just like the main streets on a busy day uptown. And of course the different men going in different directions to their different jobs because there were about 30 big engine locomotives in there being repaired on at the same time. Well, the street ran right alongside the locomotive power truck. This day I was going practically the full length of the shop. I was down at the boiler shop and I was going up near the tube shop. Well, that's where the locomotive was over that big pit where we were working. The mechanics were on the inside and I had a scaffold underneath the boiler between the frames. And as I was walking along, I looked out and I saw people walking down the street. And I began longing to see people safe again. By the time I reached my job, I got underneath and got up on the scaffold where I was ready to do my part on the outside if the mechanics were ready on the inside. And what is this? The presence of the Lord I had never known in my life came on me so much that I actually, out loud, I asked God to lift his hand. I couldn't take any. I couldn't hold it. I thought I was hurt. And that was another experience I never forgot. And it was just a case of God convincing me and calling me, encouraging me, and his presence was so real I just couldn't say no. 2 days after, I was telling you about the trip we made to London to get our visa to meet the consul, one of those trips I went alone. And I remember walking down the main street toward the consul's office, and it was looking a little dark right at that moment. Some of you recall some of the things we mentioned. But I was walking down the main street to the consul's office, and I never was so conscious of someone walking at my side as my life someone who wasn't here. Just like somebody was walking around, just about the demeanor and reality of a human being. And the peace that flooded my heart, I just couldn't get this way. So they were the three experiences that I had, the definite leading and being the spirit of God before I jumped through the border and stuck. My thought was still today, still to get me to God, the willingness of his, and the real thing. When I left Canada on July the 9th, 1931, I came down tonight with the Fed movement, as we referred to in the messages, and we arrived in Clinton, North Carolina. That was in 1931, and I'd never been in Clinton, of course. I hadn't been down south before in my life. Clinton was new to me, so I decided I was going to stay with the movement while I was there. So Fred and I, we got busy and put up our tent, a big tent, and got on a ship for 5 weeks out in a little mountain sea. There were quite a few people there, a lot of people came, and we found the Lord. So we moved the tent after 5 weeks into Kenton, and we erected it again upon the hill outside the busy, busy, busy little town. It's quite a city now, hoping we'd get some of the folks in the heat of the moment to come, but they didn't. So one day, Fred received a letter, and he was in Fred because, not the brother to me, although he was 16 years my senior. And, he received a letter from all of North Carolina. And they were one of the effects that they would like to have he and myself come down and conduct a campaign. And this is something. So he told me about content of this letter, and my first reaction was, I'm not going. Well, now he said to Lester, he said, you better pray about that. I said, Fred, I told you when I came south, I was going to pioneer. I wasn't going to go around churches on the meetings, I was going to pioneer, I was going to go into other way places and try and get something started from scratch. And I wasn't going to go around teaching in churches or events. I'm going to be a pioneer, I'm going to be anything. Well, now he said, maybe I should have told you with something, or you should have noticed something by now. I said, what's that? Well, he said, there's an increase in the fact. As you know, we only have 2 bedrooms. One you're in and the one we have. That is enough. Gladys' sister is coming down to be with her during this time, and we're going to need the bedroom that you have. Now, he said, I think it'll be a good thing if we accept this invitation down the Florida. We think it might be a credit of you to have a little hand with getting over the border. And we'd like to meet you. I think it's a good thing to go down there and have these meetings. And he said, I may have to leave you tonight. I don't know. But I do have some back here. With my wife, and then I'll return. If the meetings are going good in Raleigh, and then you can come back out to your wife and then left, and you go along here. Said, well, under those circumstances, I'll go. So we went down to Raleigh, and we started meetings there, and the meetings were very good. We were on 2 weeks. And Tuesday night, of the third week, Fred received a phone call, Gladys told him he better come home. So the next morning, he got up early and had to bed in the home of his chapel, J.P. Chapel of So I sleep that night alone, and also the Thursday night and the Friday night, and I said, these games close Sunday night. I'm not doing all alone. And I wasn't qualified at that time. And I said, I'm not going to sleep all alone. So I closed the meeting on Sunday night. The president said, we wish you continued the interest was good here. Well, not going on. I just looked for the postman every day for a letter, and sent movement to say the baby had come, but I could go on back to camping. A few days passed, and one day I became deeply burdened. Up in my bedroom, I came downstairs, and Mrs. Chapel, who was a very godly person, I don't know if you've ever met her, J.P. Chapel. I don't know a person that has a greater knowledge of the word and more spiritual thought than Mrs. Chapel, as a woman. So, she said to me when I came down, she said, I've often been burdened about sleep in North Carolina. The moment she said it, rang the bell. I said, wait, where is it? She said, it's about 15 miles east of here. And I said, how can you get there? I didn't know. I said, how can you get there? She said, I don't know. I'll phone Mrs. Riddle. So she picked up the telephone, and the phone hardly rang before the receiver was picked up at the other end. First thing, I was standing right there, and first thing, Mrs. Chapel said, you must have been right at the phone. Pick it up, sister. Yes, that's what he said. I was just sitting here wondering what to do, and I was just about to phone you, and the phone rang. Well, Mrs. Chapel said, Mr. Wilson wants to see Clayton. Could you come and take him out to Clayton? He said, I'd be glad to. I just wanted something to do. So Mrs. Allen, that's the wife of Mr. Allen, who loaned us money on the building of the chapel. Mrs. Allen and Mrs. Riddle, who are sisters-in-law, Mrs. Cooper, and Mrs. Chapel and myself, we left and rode to Clayton. As we entered Clayton, there was a big white church about the size of this auditorium, I would say, as well as a lot of Sunday schools in the back, train structure, and the moment I looked at it, the voice said, there's the place for your meeting. I thought, so, how would I get up here? Unless I was in that denomination. We went on through Clayton, we looked the town hall over, and I couldn't find a place suitable to have meetings. The voice kept saying, go back to that meeting, that building. So we drove on back, and I asked them to go on the other side of the church. We did, and I called Lady out the yard, and I was over to her. I said, what kind of a church is this? He said, it's a Christian church. Got a denomination up there, what we call the Christian Church, very close to the Church of Christ, because of a little on baptism, and I did find some pretty good men among them. They're certainly not as stringent nor legal as the Church of Christ, but nevertheless, I found some nice men in them. And I said, well, who's the preacher here? She said, Mr. Denton. Well, where does he live?
Well, he lives over near Seaquay Springs.
Well, where is that?
Well, she told us how to get to Seaquay Springs, and I thanked her. Said he's a farmer, but he spare time. He has his pastures. I'm going to do other searches. So I went to the lady from the farm. I said, you know what, Seaquay Springs is a field. Well, Mr. Denton says a little trolley ride off Seaquay Springs. So we'll go. So we go over there. We found his farm, and around the side of the house, we came out to the net. And I said, Mr. Denton, I was over to Clayton wondering if I could get for you to rent your building over there for a series of evangelistic meetings. He said, what do you mean, rent the church building for evangelistic meetings? He said, if you preach the gospel, you can have it. But he said, I don't know you. The Bible says, lay hands on your whole man. He said, and I just don't know you. Who do you know in Raleigh? Any preacher in Raleigh? I said, yes, I know Luther Wilson. Luther Wilson has been a Baptist minister for 7 years before coming into the fellowship of the assembly in Raleigh, and he's just been in there about 2 months. And so Luther and I have become quite friendly. So as soon as I mentioned Luther's name, he said, you know Luther Wilson? I said, yes. Well, he said, Luther still might have talked a number of times. He said, if Luther Wilson will endorse you, he'd certainly stand and preach in that church, and that would have been the end. So they started to reach the car, and my school Bible was on the seat, and I picked up my school Bible. I said, this is the Bible I use. He said, a school for you. Did any man use a school Bible? He said, he's all right. And I think you'll be able to have these meetings where I use a school Bible. I said, that's what I use. So anyway, he said, well, I'll talk to Luther, and he gave me right in, and Luther looked at me. But this time, it's looking in the Capital Company in Raleigh. And Luther said, by all means, that the collection had a church will never regret it. For me, well, I was back at the scene of prevention, and he said, now I hope you can help that congregation, because I tell you the truth, I can't. He said, I've been there pastor for so many years, we only preach there once a month. We had 3 or 4 churches, we just went there once a month. And he said, my next appointment there is to be my last. Closing out of the guys. But there are many other people in mind, and he said, if you can help them, I wish you God's peace. So we arranged that I'll have the meeting, and get the building and get started the next Sunday night. So when I got back and told the folks in Raleigh all about it, of course the ladies knew a good deal, but then they didn't know anything about the second visit we made out there. But we'll get started in the next Sunday night. So Mr. Chappell and Mr. Allen, a couple of the men there, quite a small company out in Raleigh at that time, only about 15 or 18 years in fellowship. Raleigh at that time was very large now, not even 50 in fellowship. But when I told the men about it, they said, well, that's fine. They said, well, now listen, I'm not going to start these meetings or this meeting. I'm not going to do that. Hey, yeah, you can go ahead. I said, no, I'm not going to start these meetings. I'm going to start this meeting earlier. So I heard them in their letter off to Mr. Lincoln, at the Canton. I told them I was Mr. Lincoln. We've got the opportunity to use a fine church building. We start meetings in, and I was coming down. Well, he spoke right back. He said, that's what I can't. He said, they haven't arrived yet, he said. So, you go ahead, he said. You go ahead and start the meetings, and I'll get down and help you just as soon as I can. And I didn't want to. Nevertheless, the brethren in Raleigh, they encouraged me, and I said, all right, let's get some advertising started. And we put up a big sign. We tried to put up a big sign every time we get, and also did a lot of cards. Said it. I said, now I want you men to put on those cards that Mr. Lincoln asked up your meeting. He's going to share these meetings. And I said, get that put on the sign there in front of the church. So when the cards came out on Friday to be distributed on Saturday, they didn't have Mr. Newton's name on there at all. And the big sign out in front of the church, they didn't have Mr. Newton's name on there at all. And I looked at the sign, and I'm going to tell you, I was provoked in one way, and yet I was more afraid than anything else. Tackle campaign alone. I lean so much on Mr. Newton.
Well, this is a poem that I've carried, and that's the exact poem, and it was 32 years ago. On the Friday, prior to this, I had gone over to Mr. Chappell's library, and I pulled a book out, and the name of that book was Something Not. And I just turned through the book, and I think I turned every page in that book, and I put it back in the library. Saturday afternoon, I was pacing up and down the Chappell Hall, where the big front stand was, sitting room. A book right, and the title of that book was Counting Not. And I just turned to the book, and I think I turned every page in that book, and put it back in the library. Starting that meeting, I was pacing up and down the chapel hall, my hands behind my back, and I was just worried about this one page. And if the meeting not being here to start with me, I would take the book. Almost unconsciously, I walked over to the library's big book, and I pulled out the same book. Why I would do that? Same book, I don't know, but I pulled it out. As I did and opened it, this fact, I hold it here, you can see it yellow, page, it fluttered on the book. And I picked it up. And this is the quote. And this it's from the text I read to you, the Hebrew translation, in Proverbs 4 and 7. This is though the Lord spoke to me that Saturday afternoon. Child of my love, fear not. The text is, but as I go step by step, I will open up the way before thee. Child of my love, fear not the unknown morrow, death not the needy man, light makes of thee. Thine ignorance doth rule no cause for sorrow, since what thou knowest not was known of thee. Thou canst not see the day, the hidden meaning of my command, but thou the light shall gain. Walk on in faith upon my promised meaning, and as thou goest, all shall be made straight. One step thou seest, and go forward both. One step is far enough for faith to see. Take that, and thy next duty shall be boldly, for step by step thy Lord is leading thee. Stand not in fear, thine adversary trumpet. Dare every peril, say to disobey. Thou shalt march on, all obstacles surmounting, for I will strong, will open up the way. Wherefore go gladly to the path to find thee, having my promise, needing nothing more, and just to know where'er the future find thee. All my journeying I go before. I read that, I just felt as though I was standing in the Lord's presence. I struck that little pamphlet for that fact, poem in the front of my Bible in the old work stage for many, many years until even the glue came off and I had to take it out. That was God's message to me. So we started the next night in the church, and the church was packed. And people had to even bring their seats out of their cars and put them on the big porches in front of the church, and we searched with 5 or 6 big columns. Quite a nice big long veranda. It had the windows open, people sitting around the outside on the seats to take out of their cars, as they used to do a lot in those days. The Lord began to save. Well, up till that time, we hadn't seen any get saved. But the people started to get saved night after night. I'm trying to tell you one or two, I know how much Lord willing, and unusual cases that were saved then. But as the people began saying back, others coming up, telling that they'd gotten saved, I kept sending letters off every day that they'd needed. Hurry up and get down here. This thing's getting out of control. And here we go. One time they took Gladys to the hospital, and I turned on to take her back home again. And so he came back, others coming up, telling that they'd gotten saved, I kept sending letters off every day that they'd needed. Hurry up and get down here. Get down here from here. He kept traveling back. One time they took Gladys to the hospital and I turned on to take her back home again.
sending letters off every day to people. Hurry up and get on with it. Just get on with it fully. And he kept traveling back. One time they took Gladys to the hospital and I turned on and took her back home again. And so he couldn't understand it. And I couldn't either. So anyway, people continued getting saved. I'm going to tell you a common sense of this. Several nights going from Raleigh over to Canton, I was in the back seat of the chapel car and I had my hand on the door and I was going to jump out that car and take off through the field and let anybody see me on the car, I wouldn't see. I was scared to death to get up and see that great crowd, that great pack. And many a night, when I got there and the chapel pulled up and stopped its car, I got out of the car right around behind the church in the field to get down on my knees in that grass. And pleased with the Lord to send someone along the street I didn't want to. And yet when I get up in the pulpit and open my mouth, it was the easiest thing in the world to preach is just to be pulled up. And people were getting saved. 197 steps to get saved. Well, it was quite evident that as the meeting drew on, Fred wasn't going to get there. The meetings went on for 5 weeks and there were 51 professed to get saved. And I think the baby arrived last week. It was a little over a month delay. But that was a lesson for me. The Lord wanted me to trust Him, to lean on Him. He had a work for me to do, and He saw that I wasn't going to develop. All the time, I was with Mr. Newton, leaning on Him. And so that was the beginning of our work in North Carolina. And although I loved Mr. Newton, I never did return to Canton. I remained in Clayton until he came down near Fiscal time. He went to the Newport News Conference. I had meetings in Newport News, but I never went back to Canton where he lived. But that was an experience I had in Raleigh, North Carolina. How the Lord overruled in it. How He made a matter of the baby's late arrival. And that had its place in God's pattern and God's plan. How God enabled me to step out and to trust Him and not to lean upon man, and He blessed, and it was amazing the way He was blessed. So these are some of the ways in which the Lord led in our beginning in Raleigh, North Carolina,